The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
What's up, everybody? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back for another exciting edition of The Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Don't forget, you can find us on iTunes as well. Subscribe to us. We'll jump into your podcast downloader or whatever you use, you know, whenever we do a new episode. So it makes it easy for you. Also, if you wouldn't mind, drop us a review. A little five-star action helps us. So we greatly appreciate that if you do it. And, you know, if you take the time to do that, obviously it's something that helps us out. And we'll even look at those from time to time. And if it's a review that we particularly like, we may pop it on here and read it on air for you.
Yeah, I was talking to someone at a party a couple weeks ago who downloaded our podcast. So
very nice.
I said, hey, how about a five-star review?
Yeah, no doubt
he
about
said, I'll
that.
Think about it.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes, you know, you need more than one episode to get that. But as I actually sit here right now, and as we're recording this, I go to iTunes and pull up the reviews and stuff like that. And there are a few, so we appreciate that. Always good to have those coming our way. So again, greatly appreciate it. As I find us here and looking at the reviews, definitely a few, including from our man Motorman 3308, best show around, go Dogs. Hey, we appreciate that.
Are we beating Kanye in downloads on iTunes, or are we still behind him?
I think we're just a little
okay.
bit behind.
All right.
Just a little bit behind. So
we'll pick it up. We'll start saying like crazy stuff.
Exactly. We'll try and get things going in that regard. But we've got a good bit to get to today. We've got Georgia baseball. We'll talk about their run to an NCAA regional. Unfortunately, coming up a little bit short in their bid to host a super regional. So we'll get to that coming up on the back half. But first, I wanted to talk about the NBA Finals. As last night, you know, we record this on Thursday this week. So Wednesday night, game three of the NBA Finals. Same old stuff, really. I mean, Kevin Durant had himself a hell of a night, 43 points, as well as going for 13 boards and 7 assists. So 3 assists shy of a triple-double. LeBron James once again with a triple-double. He scores 33. The game was an 8-point game, 110-102. So it basically came down to, because everybody else seemed to be about the same, you know, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson struggle, but Kevin Durant's able to lift them up. And that's kind of been how it is this whole series, other than, you know, Steph Curry's played well, didn't play well last night, didn't shoot well last night, was 1 of 10 from 3. So that was not obviously a good look for him. But this game three really came down to Kevin Durant versus LeBron, because it was an 8-point game. Durant outscores him by 10. That pretty much tells you all you need to know.
It was a weird, and I guess this is how, I mean, the stratosphere that LeBron is, you know, exists in now. But like, to me, it felt like he sort of had an off game. And I mean, he still, like, you just rattled off his stats there. He didn't. I mean, he had like what, you know, would be, other than the fact that his team lost and what Durant did, is like, you know, a great NBA Finals game. But it was weird, like, watching that game, how it all of a sudden it felt like, man, Rodney Hood has no help on this Cavs team. Man, it's like he was the one who was leading the charge. But, yeah, I mean, here it is. It's 3-0. The games have all been entertaining. I mean, Golden State, I know they won by 19 in game two, but that didn't really get out of hand until about midway through the fourth quarter. I mean, that fourth quarter started, it was a 10-point game, so it wasn't like Cleveland, you know, was just completely out of it. But, you know, in the end, I think the series is exactly where we thought it would be, with this Golden State up 3-0. And, I mean, the only mystery for me is, like a year ago, they enter this fourth game, and, you know, Cleveland blew them out in game four a year ago. And I just kind of feel like, for Golden State, like, do they just want to go home and clinch at home? And maybe they don't give, like, max effort on Friday night.
That's the only way I see this series ending in Oakland. I have a feeling that they're going to want to go ahead and wrap this up. And look, even if they don't give maximum effort, it takes maximum effort from LeBron to even, you know, have a chance to win any of these games. Because as we saw with game one and J.R. Smith and his losing his mind, apparently, although I don't know if you saw this, but one of the things he had talked about after that, when he, you know, had admitted that he had forgotten, he goes, look, guys, for me, you know, this is a case where this is probably, or I'm probably the best player in the NBA for that to happen to, because a lot of guys would just dwell on it and it would impact their game, impact their psyche. Me, I'm just going to go get stoned and forget about it. So, for him to say that, I mean, it's like this is 2018 in the NBA where you can actually come out and say that and not get in trouble because they don't test for that anymore. But it was just funny that that's the reaction you get from J.R. Smith. It's like, well, most guys would dwell on it and it'd probably affect them. But me, I'm just going to go get high and it'll be fine.
Yeah, and I mean he's right about that. I mean, if there's one guy that's not going to linger and just haunt him, it probably is J.R. Smith. I mean, the question is like, could he potentially have been high during that game though when he had that gaffe and just dribbled out the clock? That's always a possibility for sure. But yeah, when Cleveland didn't win Game One, that was their crack at making it a series, and it's definitely done now. The only drama that remains for Friday night and potentially Monday, because it ain't going to get past that for sure, but is who's going to win the MVP. After Game 2, it was Steph Curry. After last night, now all of a sudden it's Durant. So, you know, maybe those two guys basically just have this this back and forth on Friday night to decide which one wants to be the MVP of the series.
Exactly, and it's funny because Kevin Durant's been very consistent in this series, playing very well. Steph Curry had great games in Game 1 and 2, didn't really play that well. Again, only, you know, 1 of 10 from 3 in Game 3. But, yeah, it's going to come down to those two guys. I know a lot of people are saying, well, could LeBron win it if his team loses? I'm like, not if they get swept.
Yeah, I mean, he should have won it the first year that they played Golden State. They gave it to Iguodala.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. You can win it. I feel like it'd be fine to win it in a losing effort, like if it went 7 games, but if the series goes 4 games, a person on the losing team can't win it.
No, and I mean, honestly, I doubt LeBron really would want to win it.
Who would want that?
Yeah. It's like every now and then, I guess they don't award the trophy out on the court, though, but, you know, hockey with the whatever their, is it the
Conn Smythe.
The Conn Smythe is their playoff MVP.
Right.
Occasionally, you'll see some goaltender from the losing team win it. It's like, you know, he has to like come skating out there on the ice while the other team has the Stanley Cup. But yeah, I doubt LeBron, as soon as the series is over, he's going to start thinking about where he's going to be playing next season.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, you watch this series, and it's just been so crazy that when you play a team like a Golden State, they can just hit these shots and they just become such daggers. I mean, you look at the shot that Steph Curry hit. It was one of the shots he hit in game number 2 where he's like at the end of a shot clock and like there's, I think maybe Kevin Love had switched over to him.
Yeah.
And he just like throws it up in desperation and it nothing but net, like the purest swish you can have. It's like, what the hell are you supposed to do with that? And Kevin Durant had some similar shots in game 3, the one at the end of the first half where he just drills a 3 with somebody like right in his face and gets them closer. You know, that's the thing. If you're the Cavaliers and something like that happens right before the half, you're still going into halftime with the lead, but it doesn't feel like it because the Warriors had all the momentum and they're so great in the third quarter. And also last night, again, late in the game, Kevin Durant hits a dagger 3 that really just crushes Cleveland's spirit.
Yeah, and basically from the same spot on the floor that he hit one last year when Cleveland was winning. Remember game 3 last year, Cleveland was up by 6 points and then didn't score for like the last 3.5 minutes.
Right.
So, I mean, a year ago, that series was close to being 2-1. I mean, this series is, I mean, Cleveland could just as easily be up 2-1 in this series, but, you know, in the end, they're not. They're just down 3-0 again, but it is like, it's crazy how game 3 almost, you know, so much resembled the third game from a year ago, too, and how Golden State does from Durant's shot last night. Remember, Curry hit that 3 at the buzzer in game 1 that Cleveland would have been in the – it was tied. I mean, Cleveland would have gone to halftime up in game 1.
It's just those shots right before the end of the half.
Yeah.
Like you said there, with game 1 with Curry doing it, game 3 with Kevin Durant doing it. It's like those are backbreakers for momentum because you feel so good going into the half, either being up or, you know, in both instances – you know, they ended up still being up last night in game 3, but like you said, they would have gone into the locker room with a lead, and instead Steph Curry drills that 3 in game 1, and it's tied. So it's just a much different feel.
Well, and last night that took it from an 8-point game to a 5-point game, right? And, you know, when you know that Golden State, that third quarter surge is coming, you need all the cushion that you can get. So, You know, that 3 points was monstrous. And, you know, and then even with Curry, who hit the 1 3-pointer last night, that was a huge shot because that was a 1 point game. And all, you know, so you feel it, you're Cleveland, hey, 1 point game, one bucket, you're back in the lead, and all of a sudden he hits that three and it's a 4 point game. And I think that's the moment when it was like, here we go again. Golden State's gonna weather and survive the night, and they did. And now, you know, like I said, I think the only drama left in the series is who wins the MVP, Curry or Durant.
Yeah, exactly. That really is it. And just looking at Kevin Durant, watching that guy play, I mean, it is so crazy. That guy's basically 7 feet tall, and the way he handles the ball, the way he moves, the way he can back you down. And that was one thing, too, that I've noticed in this series. Like, when Klay and Steph are playing well and shooting well, then, you know, the defense turns their attention to the perimeter a little bit, and then you can just give the ball to Kevin Durant, and he can back these guys down, whether it's George Hill, whether it's you know, someone else, or one of these guys in the Cavs, or J.R. Smith. It's like, those guys don't stand a chance when Kevin Durant can just back you down, spin, hit a little mid-range jumper on you, and he does that so well. It's like, what the hell are you supposed to do? You can't he's almost indefensible.
Well, and it's big, too. I mean, those guys are obviously, like, all-star great players, but, I mean, I think it helps, too, that there's not a ton of pressure on any of them.
No.
Because they know that the other guys
got another
are there.
Guy.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, they could just – like Curry last night, he can jack up like 9 threes and miss them and be 0 for his first 9, and it mm-hmm. doesn't matter because somebody else – you know, like between Thompson, Durant, you know, even like Draymond Green.
No, Iguodala came back last night
yeah.
and played.
I mean, somebody's going to be
Nick
able to
Young
pick
is
them.
Not a bad player.
Right. I mean, they can – like – they can have an off night, whereas for Cleveland, I mean, if LeBron is not on, forget about it. They've got no shot. But here's Steph Curry. He cannot be on, and they could still win an NBA Finals game on the road because Durant's there to pick up the slack.
By the way, I saw a horrible take on Twitter the other day where it was like, LeBron James, I'm not saying he's not like one of the greatest players ever. He's definitely one of the top, you know, two or three. But he doesn't have that defining moment like Jordan had, like the double nickels or the flu game. And it's just so stupid to say that because he's got plenty of those moments. But then last night, he does the throwing off the backboard dunk, and it's like, oh, yeah, Tracy McGrady did that in an All-Star game. LeBron James just did it in the NBA Finals.
Yeah. I don't know, like, the defining moment, but, you know, what do they want from
him? Like, what do you want from the guy?
Yeah.
For me, like, I know that they're not going to win this series, but he just pulled off one of the crazier dunks I've seen, and he did it in the NBA Finals. That wasn't an exhibition game. That wasn't some crap regular season game. He threw it off the backboard to himself and threw it down in an NBA Finals game. It's unreal.
Like, well, what about the defining moment is that he dragged that Cleveland team to the NBA Finals to
right.
begin with?
Right.
I mean, or even that. I mean, really, the one is that first Finals he ever
See,
appeared
the
in.
The first
way back
Finals
when.
Is the one that I give him a lot more credit for. This one, look, it's impressive what he did. He has a pretty bad team around him, but you look at the way that the path kind of opened up this year. You know, they struggled against a Pacers team that nobody thought was going to make them struggle. Then they take a Raptors team who LeBron James owns, DeMar DeRozan
right, but they
and
beat,
Kyle Lowry.
They beat the top two seeds in the East.
They did.
So.
They did. But to be fair, those teams, you know, again, the Celtics were without their two best players. So that obviously hurt. And Kyrie going down sort of later on in the season. They didn't have Gordon Hayward, and Brad Stevens did a hell of a job there. They did beat the top two seeds, but it was also a very watered down East. So,
all
look,
right.
I'm not trying to take away from LeBron. I'm just saying that of those two comparisons, the first one he took when he took them and lost to the Spurs, that was a little more impressive to me than this.
Yeah, but now you sound like all those analysts in 07 that said Hawaii was going to beat Georgia, and
well,
then in the end, oh, no big deal. Georgia, it was Hawaii. That, yeah. Weren't you you thought Toronto was going to beat them.
I did.
Like, ah, they suck.
I did, but that's because I thought this team was so bad, and it is a credit to LeBron for how crazy he's played in these playoffs. He hasn't really had that off night. You know, you talked about the only way that they can lose is if he has an off night. It's like, well, he hadn't had that. And I know that they can't beat this Warrior squad, but he has played unbelievable again last night. Another Finals triple-double. He also passed Jordan for most, I think it was the most 30-point playoff games. It was either playoff games or Finals games game. It was one of the two stats. So, again, the guy's unbelievable. He's one of the best players of all time. It doesn't matter who's better, him or Jordan, But it's so hard to make that comparison. It's such a stupid comparison to make because when you compare eras, there's just way too many different variables for you to make those comparisons.
Where's he going to end up? I'm thinking he's going to go to Houston because he's just going to want to take Golden State out in the Western Conference Finals and not even let them get to the finals anymore.
But how does Houston make that work? I don't understand.
I
mean, I'm sure they can figure it out
some way.
But before the Brian Colangelo burner account scandal dropped, I would have said Philadelphia, but now I don't know. Like, I feel like, by the way, with this whole Colangelo thing, it's like, I feel like the 76ers are dragging their feet. It's like, y'all got to make a decision.
I think the Sixers are still like the odds-on favorite for him to go there with the Rockets now second.
Yeah.
And then you've got a bunch of, like, you know, he ain't going to the Lakers.
Although Joel Embiid, you know, when he was asked about it, I think during the playoffs, he was like, we don't need him.
Yeah.
It's like, man.
That was before they lost.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone was, like, pumping them up. Like, they're the best team in the East. And then they lost to the Celtics. And now I'm like, yeah, you know what? Maybe we could use him.
We may need him.
Yeah.
But, no, I think Philly would be cool. And you talk about legacy and stuff like that. And it feels like for LeBron's, the purity of his legacy, I guess, it kind of feels like it would be better for him to go to Philly and take that team to a title as opposed to going to Houston, because that would feel like joining up with, you know, with James Harden, with Chris Paul. It kind of feels like, you know, just in terms of, and I don't think he cares, but just in terms of the media, and I guess I'll call them the haters out there, it kind of feels like going to Philly would be the move that kind of would be better for legacy purposes.
Yeah, but I think in the end, he just wants to win another ring.
He
or
does.
Maybe two.
Yeah,
so
and I mean,
going
to Houston would make sense in that regard. I was trying to think of some other spots, and it doesn't feel like L.A. for a number of reasons. I don't think he wants to get involved with LeVar Ball. I think that's one reason, and there's some other issues too. But, you know, what about Oklahoma City? What if they were able to get rid of Carmelo Anthony and the salary they got to pay him and bring in LeBron to play with Westbrook and Paul George?
I've thought about that. Plus, it would kind of be like that would sort of be a way to stick it to Durant.
Him
too.
And Westbrook teaming up to take down Durant. I'd be all for that if he went to Oklahoma City.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Although,
would they be able to get past the Warriors? That's the question. I think
the
move that he wants to make is the one that puts him in the best position to get past the Warriors.
Yeah. So, now, would Paul George still be there?
I know he's a free agent.
Right.
So I guess it just depends. Like, if they told Paul George, hey, we're getting LeBron James, I'm sure he'd stay.
Yeah. I mean, for sure the Rockets would with Paul Harden and LeBron.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that's because I don't know. I get the sense, maybe it's just the heat of the moment, and these teams have played 4 years in a row, and I don't get a sense that he really cares for Steph Curry.
It seems like he hates these guys.
Yeah, and you know, and Draymond is just he's a psychopath.
Well, of course.
You know, I think he's cool with Durant or whatever, but I get the sense that he probably just wants to take them out even before
the finals.
Well,
him and Curry, there's definitely a rift there. You can tell just by the way that they interact with each other. And sort of the way that they've talked about each other in the past. There's definitely a rift there. But I really would think that Philadelphia and Houston right now is currently constructed, and maybe OKC. Those are the three teams that I think he could join and they could take down the Warriors. Although Philadelphia's a lot younger, I think the problems there would be, okay, you've got Ben Simmons and LeBron James who are essentially, I know LeBron is much, much better, but they're essentially the same guy in terms of what they want to do on the floor. You know, both of them are ball-centric. So what do you do there? Do you tell Simmons that he's got to take a step back? Do you tell Simmons he's going to be the point guard and that LeBron will be like a small forward? I mean, what do you do there? That fit might be a little weird. And you've got Markelle Fultz, who didn't even play a whole lot there in the playoffs. So there's some question marks to be sure with Philadelphia. I think the easiest slide in would be Houston, but how do they make it work with the money? And then, like I said, Oklahoma City, I think that would be an interesting one too, just in terms of that whole – hey, you know, Russell, let's team up and take down Kevin Durant. That would be interesting.
Well, Houston would be, because there were moments even like last night that there are times when I think LeBron is like, he is looking to pass first too much. And
that's his biggest weakness, I feel like, is that he doesn't have that killer instinct of a Kobe or a Michael where it's like, I'm not passing you the ball.
I don't think it's not a killer instinct. I think it's like, first of all, he gets fouled every time he has
the selfishness.
But no, he gets fouled every time he has the ball. But when he's when he sees a guy like, all right, the defense is on me and there's a guy wide open, it's like you're going to throw it to him, and he just doesn't have – those guys aren't consistent enough
to hit.
Well,
the problem is when that's Rodney Hood. It's
right,
like,
but when you're in Houston and that's going to be it, I mean, he's going to penetrate. And
then kick
the
out to Harden, kick out to Paul.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different, or even like Ariza or somebody like that. It's going to be way different. I don't think like it's because he lacks a killer instinct. It's because, first of all, he gets fouled pretty much every time he handles the ball. But what are you going to do? I mean, you can call it every single time. He's just enormous. And, you know, maybe the contact doesn't look as severe because of his size versus who it is that's fouling him. But, you know, when he's there and he drives and all of a sudden, like, well, oh, look, there's Jordan Clarkson standing out there wide open. I mean, how do you not give it to him for a look? But, you know, what happens is Jordan Clarkson, clank.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see what ends up happening if the finals, you know, by the time you listen to this on Friday when we publish it, that's when game four is. So it's possible some of you will be listening to this and the series will already be over. I have a feeling that it is going to be over. I don't think it's going to five games. Although if it does, we talked about it earlier, it would be because Golden State just comes out completely flat.
Yeah, because they know. I mean, they just go back Monday night and win it in Oakland.
Exactly.
And they can make, you know, Cleveland fly across country just to lose another game and then have to go home.
I guarantee you it ain't getting past game five, though, if it gets there.
No. No. I mean, that would require, like 2 years ago, somebody getting suspended for a game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, we'll jump to Georgia baseball now for the rest of this edition of the Crossover Podcast. And Georgia falling to Duke in their NCAA regional doubleheader this past Monday. And, you know, Georgia just ran into a buzzsaw. They're a team that is predominantly left-handed in terms of the guys they rely on to generate offense. And Duke had some left-handed arms to kind of neutralize what Georgia wanted to do. It's crazy because Duke was a team that was down 8-1 after already having lost a game on the first day of the regional. They were down 8-1 to Campbell. 2-hour-plus rain/lightning delay happens. And Duke's bats must have gotten struck by lightning because they end up going on to win that game, scoring 11 runs in the top of the ninth inning.
Yeah, I thought it's Monday started out where, like, if Georgia didn't win that first game, they were going to be in big trouble in that second game. Just because after if Duke just was thrown another lifeline there and had one more crack and won that game, you just had a feeling like there was some momentum, some destiny, there was something on their side, and that's exactly how it played out. I mean, Georgia's bats went silent when that big lefty came in, and they just continued on into that next game too, and Duke got a bunch of big hits and just hit a bunch of home runs Monday. I mean, what was the final homer? Georgia didn't homer at all on Monday, and what, they homered like five times?
No, Curry got one on Monday.
That's right. He homered on Monday, mm-hmm. And that was it. But Duke had like five or six, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. The Jeff Conine's kid, Griffin Conine, had I think, a few. I think also some of their other guys in the lineup hit really well. I think their leadoff guy got one. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. But, yeah, they were hitting them out in droves. And Georgia and, you know, Keegan McGovern, unfortunately, didn't have a good day on Monday, and he and Michael Curry had really been the catalyst for Georgia's offense. So when you don't have one of those guys playing well, it's obviously going to hurt you. And I thought that Georgia a little bit handled and this is just me personally with this opinion. You know, I don't know how Coach Strickland would answer the question or how anyone would in terms of how you handle a doubleheader where you only need to win one of the games. I felt like with some of the arms they brought in game one, they weren't their more trusted bullpen arms. And so it almost felt like they were just putting those guys out there because it's like, okay, but we've got game two to fall back on. And I hate that mentality. It's almost like, and I don't know for sure that's what went into the decision making, but if it is, that's not something I enjoy, just because if you look at, it's kind of like the thing where you'd rather be down 4 at the end of a football game than 3, because if you're down 3, your team is going to play for the field goal.
Right.
Whereas, you know, if you're down 4, you have to score a touchdown. So it kind of feels like that's what happened to Georgia, where they didn't treat game one as necessarily the must win because they had game two to fall back on. And I personally just think that's a dangerous mentality.
Yeah, well, and, you know, looking back on it too, I didn't think, you know, in hindsight, it wasn't the best idea to have the guy you were going to have start the second game of that doubleheader, if there was one,
play
which
the
there
whole
was,
game.
Roast in center field for 3.5 hours.
So either maybe you should have started him in game one. And then had him.
I mean, or just not had him play center field. And
that's true.
You're going to start our second game and put Tucker Maxwell back there. And, you know, as it turned out, it's not like C.J. Smith was the difference in that first game or anything because Georgia lost. But then, you know, you come out and, you know, I mean, I can't you play an entire game, nine innings, and then you've got less than an hour to turn around and get ready to start that next game on the mound. I mean, that's not an ideal situation. And Smith struggled. But then again, I mean, every Georgia starter that they threw out there this weekend, even in the wins over Campbell and Troy, struggled. And that was really a big deal because it started taxing the bullpen early on in the weekend, all the way back to that first game. But Georgia's starting pitching just was not good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And there is one thing I'll say that I'm a little upset about, and it's the you know, the armchair analysts that didn't go to any games at Foley this year, that maybe Monday was the first time they'd watched Georgia baseball all season. And then, you know, they come out and they're super critical of Coach Strickland or critical of the team. And it's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, this is Georgia season in terms of a bounce back, getting, you know, I don't think any of us thought going into the season. It was like, yeah, getting to a regional would be nice, but to host one and possibly host a super, you know, getting a top eight seed, I don't think anybody thought Georgia was going to be in that position. So you got to give Coach Strickland and that staff all the credit in the world for getting Georgia to that position. And a lot of the guy, you know, this is a very young team. I know that you're going to have to replace a Keegan McGovern. Michael Curry is also not going to come back. He got drafted and he is, elected to move on, which you don't blame him for, obviously. But Georgia's going to have to replace some stuff. But they've also got a lot of good talent coming back. So I fully expect this team to be kind of back in the same position next season. And I think they've done a fantastic job, and I just don't think you can jump out and all of a sudden be super critical when you haven't been paying attention.
No, I mean, they surprised everybody. I mean, they had to be the surprise team in college baseball to have, for a program that hadn't even been in the postseason since 2011, had four straight losing seasons under Coach Strickland, to all of a sudden just emerge this year as a top eight national seed. I mean, one big thing that Georgia's going to have to find a replacement for next season is the power they're going to be losing with Curry and McGovern, because those two guys hit 31 home runs combined this season. Curry hit double-digit home runs in all 3 years he was here. I mean, McGovern's power this year really did come out of nowhere because he had not shown that at all during his career, and all of a sudden, I mean, he made a huge leap. I think he had 11 career home runs coming into the season, and 18 this year. But I was thinking about the Georgia baseball, and it's been historically, and it's been odd. Like 1990, they win the national championship. Mm-hmm. That kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of the 90s were really just abysmal. Then, you know, Coach Polk came on, and 2000 wasn't a terrible year, but certainly nobody saw 2001 coming when they won the SEC title. Then Coach Perno took over, and they did make a regional in 2002, but then in 2003 went 10-20 in the SEC. And then in 2004 made the College World Series. 2005 they went 12-17 in the SEC, and then in 2006 came back and went to the College World Series. 2007, last in the SEC again in 11-19. Then 2008, they come back and almost win the national championship. And here you were this year coming off bad seasons, and all of a sudden you're a top eight national seed. So I guess, like, the point is, you know, can Georgia get something going kind of consistently? Because even in that great decade under Coach Perno, Georgia's best seasons were completely unexpected. I mean, They followed years where the Dogs were bad, if not just last place in the SEC. I mean, I think when you look at it, I mean, Coach Perno coached as many SEC titles as he won. I think we had we finished last in the SEC as many times too. So
it's been a topsy turvy kind of roller coaster type program, and that's where you hope for next season. Coach Strickland can keep the consistency going and get this team back into the postseason, and hopefully with a shot to be where they were this past season.
Yeah, because, I mean, this is now – I mean, now what the struggle is because of this season, now the expectations will be higher next year, and that's kind of, you know, maintaining it and having another solid year, because the – you know, with the trajectory of the program has kind of historically been is when Georgia's had a great season, it's just has really come out of nowhere.
Exactly. So hopefully next season Georgia gets back to this position. He's Chris Bram. I'm Sam Franco. That'll do it for this edition of the Crossover Podcast. This has been episode 49, so next time we come at you, episode 50.
That's our golden anniversary.
That's right. We'll have to work on something special for episode 50. We'll figure out what that is over the next week. But again, Chris Brame, Sam Franco with you. Thank you so much for listening. Back again soon with another episode of the Crossover right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.